Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswata Deve Gauravani Prachadane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Parasatyadesha Tadane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 1, Chapter 15, Verse 32. Nishamya Bhagavan Margam. Samstam Yadukulasya Cha. Svapataya Matim Chakre. Nibritatma Yudhisthira. Translation: upon hearing of Lord Krishna's returning to his abode and upon understanding the end of the Yadu dynasty's earthly manifestation, Maharaj Yudhisthira decided to go back home, back to Godhead. Purport: Maharaj Yudhisthira also turned his attention to the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita after hearing about the Lord's departure from the vision of earthly people. He began to deliberate on the Lord's way of appearance and departure. The mission of the Lord's appearance and disappearance in the mortal universe is completely dependent on His supreme will. He is not forced to appear or disappear by any superior energy as the living beings appear and disappear, being forced by the laws of nature. Whenever the Lord likes, He can appear Himself from anywhere and everywhere without disturbing His appearance and disappearance in any other place. He is like the sun. The sun appears and disappears on its own accord at any place without disturbing its presence in other places. The sun appears in the morning in India without disappearing from the Western Hemisphere. The sun is present everywhere and anywhere all over the solar system, but it also so appears that in a particular place the sun appears in the morning and also disappears at some fixed time in the evening. The time limitation even of the sun is of no concern, and so what to speak of the Supreme Lord, who is the creator and controller of the sun. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita it is stated that anyone who factually understands the transcendental appearance and disappearance of the Lord by His inconceivable energy becomes liberated from the laws of birth and death and is placed in the eternal spiritual sky where the Vaikuntha planets are. There, such liberated souls can eternally live without the pangs of birth, death, old age, and disease. In the spiritual sky, the Lord and those who are eternally engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord are all eternally young, because there is no old age and disease, and there is no death. Because there is no death, there is no birth. It is concluded, therefore, that simply by understanding the Lord's appearance and disappearance in truth, one can attain the perfectional stage of eternal life. Therefore, Maharaj Yudhisthira also began to consider going back to Godhead. The Lord appears on the earth or any other mortal planet along with His associates who live with Him eternally, and the members of the Yadu family were engaged in supplementing the pastimes of the Lord, or no other than His eternal associates, and so also Maharaj Yudhisthira and his brothers and mother, etc. Since the appearance and disappearance of the Lord and His eternal associates are transcendental, one should not be bewildered by the external features of appearance and disappearance. Translation: upon hearing of Lord Krishna's returning to His abode and upon understanding the end of the Yadu dynasty's earthly manifestation, Maharaj Yudhisthira decided to go back home, back to Godhead. So we have a description here of the disappearance of Krishna, and this appears at the beginning of the whole Bhagavatam. It's a little bit out of order chronologically. Of course, later on we have another description in the last cantos of the Bhagavatam of how Krishna disappears, and all sorts of details are given. At the same time, we often hear reference to the fact that it is puzzling for people when they hear about this disappearance of Krishna, because it looks like he dies like an ordinary person. He gets shot in the foot, of all things. And then he dies from an arrow wound of a hunter, which sounds very strange for the Lord. Of course, we understand that sometimes the Lord doesn't disappear in this way. For instance, Ramchandra, he doesn't disappear like that. He doesn't get killed by anybody. Nrsimhadev doesn't get killed by anybody. But Krishna seems to follow a very different pattern. He is born like a human being in a prison house and gets smuggled out of the prison house. And then he dies by getting, he disappears by getting shot by a hunter in the foot. So this is part of Krishna's lila, or his pastimes. It is said that Krishna is human-like. He has a human form. Now, of course, others have human forms also. Ramchandra also has a human-like form. Others don't have a human form, like Narasimhadev or Varaha. You have a pig form, or a fish form, or a lion form, or a bird form. So those are quite unhuman. But we also have the human forms. So we have Vyasadeva is human-like, and Kapila is human-like, Parsarama is human-like, and Buddha is human-like, and Krishna is human-like. But of these forms, Krishna particularly is very puzzling because he is very human-like. Ramchandra has a human form, but no one ever forgets that he's the Supreme Lord because of a manifestation of his great powers. So all the people of Ayodhya, they're worshipping him as Supreme Lord in a very reverential mood. But with Krishna, we find that it is quite unlike that. And even persons like Arjuna, he also forgets that Krishna is Supreme Lord. Even though he is in a different position from the people of Vrindavan, because yes, he recognizes Krishna as God, but when he saw the universal form, then when he saw that, then he apologized to Krishna. He said, well, please forgive me because I treated you as a friend and we sat on the same chair, we ate the same food together, we joked together and all this. So please forgive me because now I understand you're Supreme Lord. So even Arjuna thought of Krishna as his friend rather than as Supreme Lord at times. So what to speak of the people of Vrindavan? So they're put in a very special position in spite of the fact that they seem lower than everybody else. In other words, by social position, they are Vaishyas, cowherd people. And the people in Dwarka are Kshatriyas, the next higher class. Nevertheless, the people of Vrindavan are honored and respected as being the ultimate devotees of the Lord, even though their social position was lower. And the reason is that they never saw Krishna as Supreme Lord. And even if Krishna decided, I will show them I'm Supreme Lord, they refused to accept it. So this is very remarkable. Why they couldn't see him as Supreme Lord. And ultimately, of course, the yoga maya like that, but ultimately the answer is their intense devotion would not allow it. Yeah? So for instance, we have the case of Mother Yasoda. So Mother Yasoda thought of Krishna as her child, not as Supreme Lord. Whereas Devaki thought of Krishna, yes, he's my child because he was born from me in the prison house. At the same time, I know he's Supreme Lord. But Mother Yasoda never thought like that. And one time, Mother Yasoda was trying to discipline Krishna because all the boys were saying Krishna is very bad, he eats dirt and things like this. Of course, he also heard other rumors about him stealing things from the houses of other people and, you know, stealing their yogurt and butter and all things like that, pinching the babies and making them cry, whatever. So she got a little worried and she said, okay, Krishna, you've done something very bad. You ate some dirt, so open your mouth. And he said, oh, well, I didn't do it, but you must have done it. So open your mouth, let me see what's in your mouth. And then Krishna opened his mouth, and he was a little puzzled, what should I do, because I ate the dirt actually, and she sees the dirt in my mouth, she's going to punish me, so what should I do? So he opened his mouth, and then she looked in, and then she saw the whole universe there. She was astonished, and she looked out, and she said, the universe is outside me, I see the sun and the moon and the trees and Vrindavan. And she looked inside again, and she saw everything, not only everything, but even herself in there looking in Krishna's mouth, within Krishna, which is very puzzling. And then she got very serious and she said, well, this is something, you know, very, very remarkable. But then she forgot all about it. And she began to worry, something is wrong. Maybe the demons are doing something to us and giving me this illusion. Maybe they're trying to attack Krishna. So she forgot completely this idea that Krishna, this is a universal form, more or less, like Arjuna saw the universal form, the whole, all the planets and all the devatas and the demons and everyone inside as a body of the Lord. So everything was inside Krishna, like the universal form. But she forgot about it completely, unlike Arjuna, who began to pray and say, please forgive me, this universal form is your, you know, supreme form or whatever. She forgot about it completely. And she called the brahmanas and told the brahmanas to chant mantras to protect Krishna from demons and whatever, not because she couldn't figure it out. And she forgot about the whole incident. She didn't get disturbed at all. She didn't think Krishna is supreme Lord. So the explanation is that of why she forgot like this is that her intense love was there. She had such intense love for Krishna as her child that whatever happened, she could not see anything else except Krishna's my child. So Krishna tested her more or less and said, okay, I'm the universal form, I'm Vishwarupa, what are you going to do? And then she passed the test. She forgot about it. She says, no, this is not true. Some illusion. Krishna's my child. So Krishna did this many times in Vrindavan. He killed many demons, and like Putana. But when he killed Putana, then people thought, oh, well, somehow Putana died, in spite of the fact that we know that he sucked the life air out of her when she tried to poison him. So, okay, something happened and she died, and it wasn't Krishna. So every time Krishna killed a big demon, they said, that's not Krishna, somebody else is doing this. Vishnu is protecting Krishna. So in this way, all the people of Vrindavan, and every time Krishna showed his powers, their love for him was so intense that they found some excuse to show that Krishna is not the Supreme Lord, he must be my child. Similarly, when Nanda Maharaj was kidnapped or taken by the Varuna's men, and then Krishna dived into the water and then he went down to talk to Varuna. When Varuna and all of his associates saw Krishna, they began to offer their respects to Krishna, because as devatas, they knew he's Supreme Lord. And they were very reverential and offering praises, etc. And Nanda Maharaj was standing there and he was looking at this habit. Oh, Krishna must be the Supreme Lord or something, because why are all the devatas praising him and offering their respects like that? So he's a little bit shocked by that. And then Krishna took him back to Raja, and Nanda Maharaj began to speak to all the people. That look what happened. Krishna was getting respect from Varuna and all the devatas. Maybe Supreme Lord like that. And so they began to discuss like this for a long time. And then they called Krishna and he said, well, you must be the Supreme Lord. You just show us your powers. So then Krishna actually showed them. There's a whole long description of how Krishna showed them Brahman, and then he showed them Goloka and the spiritual world. And then suddenly they were back in Vrindavan again. And then they understood, this is the best place. It's better than spiritual world. It's better than Brahman. Being with Krishna is the best thing. And then they thought, yes, Krishna showed us this, but actually it can't be true. Because Krishna is the son of Nanda Maharaj. He's not Supreme Lord. So he couldn't have done all this. So somehow or other, they make some rationale to understand that Krishna is not Supreme Lord, no matter what happens, no matter what power he shows to them. So that is a sign of their intense love for Krishna, that it overpowers any reminder that he is Supreme Lord. Whereas people in Dwarka, they automatically accept him as Supreme Lord. And even if he does show affection, then they revert back to, oh yeah, he's also Supreme Lord. So that is why the love of the queens of Dwarka or the associates there is considered to be less than that of the people of Vrindavan. Because in Vrindavan, no matter what Krishna does, no matter what power he shows, still, they don't accept him as Supreme Lord. Krishna's only my son, Krishna's only my lover, Krishna's only my friend. And that's how they think of Krishna. So this is the human-like nature of Krishna. And, of course, we find many examples of that in Vrindavan where he is very human-like. For instance, the Damodar Leela. In Damodar Leela, Krishna runs away from Mother Yashoda in fear. And he begins crying when he sees a stick. But then how can the Lord be afraid of anybody? How can he be afraid of a little stick? But he's genuinely afraid of a stick, and tears come out of his eyes, and he's trembling because of a stick of Mother Yashoda. So if regular people see that pastime, they're a little puzzled. How can the Supreme Lord act like this? Maybe it's just a show. He's just, you know, pretending like that. But actually, we can say he's not pretending, because if he were pretending, then what is the use of his affection or people's affection? It's all false if he's just pretending to do this for Mother Yashoda. So actually he does feel that in one of his particular forms. And he experiences himself as a child, and he identifies himself as a child, and Mother Yashoda is his mother. Not that everybody's my servant and they have to respect me. He sees Krishna as his mother, and he gets afraid of her. So this is, you can say, unheard of in many of the other forms of the Lord. We don't see them getting punished or getting tied up by the mother. Rama doesn't get tied up. He doesn't cry. But Krishna gets tied up, and he's angry at Mother Yashoda, etc. So he shows very similar traits like a human being. Just as mothers punish their children, etc., and the children cry, and they cry for food or whatever like this. So Krishna acts like this, very, very human-like. So it is puzzling for people, especially people who read the Bhagavatam and have no devotion. It's very puzzling for them how you're taking this person as Supreme Lord, because he's so like a human, does ordinary activities like a human being. And even Brahma, who should know that Krishna is Supreme Lord, because it is due to the devatas complaining to Brahma that finally the Lord said, I will appear in this material world as Krishna. And when Krishna was born, all the devatas were there praising him in the prison house. So Brahma himself became confused by Krishna. After Agasura was killed, then the devatas began praising Krishna, because Agasura emerged in Krishna's body. So they were shocked, because how can a demon get Sayuja Mukti? This is what the Gyanis get. How can a demon get this? And then, oh, he's Supreme Lord, he's very great, and they began praising him. And that praise was so loud that Brahma began to, on Brahma Loka, which is much higher than the other planets, he heard this praise, and he said, I wonder what's wrong, what are they doing? So he came down, and he entered into Vrindavan, and he looked around, and he looked in the forest, and then he saw Krishna there. But then it was surprising, because Krishna was a little boy sitting in the grass with thousands and thousands of cowherd boys, and they were all very excitedly eating. They were opening their packs of lunch that their mothers had prepared, and they were eating. Not only they're eating, but they were sharing their food, testing each other's food. And Krishna was accepting food from others, and he was giving food to others. They're putting food in each other's mouth. They had food all over their hands, all over their bodies, etc. So then he got very shocked. How could this be the Supreme Lord that the devatas are praising? But he just looks like a little dirty boy, you know, contaminated with food all over his body. So they were very, he was very shocked. You know, how can this be Supreme Lord? Yes, he is, but he isn't. So he understood, yes, he is, because I know that he was, you know, he came to, you know, kill Kamsa and deliver us from the demons, but this doesn't look like Krishna, the Supreme Lord, at all. So that's why he tried to test him, and he stole all the calves and cowherd boys. And I said, if he's really God, he will understand what happened. But for 1 year, it looked like he was bewildered. He didn't know, but it was a different type of bewilderment, because he became all the calves and cowherd boys and replaced the other ones which were sleeping. And when Brahma came back, he got bewildered, because the cowherd boys were playing with Krishna, and simultaneously they were sitting in lying in the cave sleeping. And he got very puzzled. How I put them there and they're still there. How can they be outside also simultaneously? The same ones, exactly the same. So he got bewildered by that. And then, while he's looking at these cowherd boys playing with Krishna, he said, who are they actually? Are they the real ones, or are these the real ones? And then suddenly, they turned into Vishnu forms, who were creators of universes, just like the universal form that was in Krishna's belly, or the universal form that Arjuna saw. But not one Millions. Because there were millions of calves and cowherd boys, and each one turned into a Vishnu form who was in charge of a universe. And he was shocked again. How can all these Vishnu forms be there? And in this universe there was a Brahma. So there were millions of Brahmas also, like Brahmas. There's millions of Brahmas there, not just one universe, but millions of universes and millions of Vishnus and millions of Brahmas and Devatas, etc. So that was more shocking. And then suddenly they all disappeared. And who was standing there? Krishna. Krishna was there with his flute in his belt and holding some curd rice in his hand. And then he understood Krishna is the source of everything, of all the devatas and all of the Vishnu forms. Krishna is the ultimate source of everything. So then finally Brahma understood that Krishna is a little boy. He's also Supreme Lord. But further, deeper realization, he says, this form in Vrindavan is higher than any other form. The form of a little boy playing with the cows and the cowherd boys, he is higher than all the other forms of the Lord, all the avatars and all the Vishnu forms who produce the avatars. He's supreme, which is a shocking revelation for him, because previously he was doubting, how can this little boy who's playing with the cowherd boys be God? But now he understood, yes, he is supreme. So, therefore, the Lord as Krishna is very human-like, and he can bewilder everyone, including Brahma, who's head of the universe and most intelligent. So, no wonder that people, if they read or study or hear the pastimes of Krishna, they may get bewildered by his activities. And among his activities that are bewildering are his appearance and disappearance, as explained here. He appears like an ordinary child and gets smuggled out of a prison house, and then he disappears by getting shot by a hunter in the foot, of all things. So he looks very human. So people who don't have any faith and say, okay, look, he must be regular human being at most. Maybe it's mythology, maybe he's just a human being, an ancient king of India, and he was born in strange circumstances and he died in very pitiful circumstances by being shot in the foot. So they'll think like that, yeah? Because he acts like an ordinary person, and his appearance and disappearance are quite remarkable for Supreme Lord. Why should Supreme Lord do this and act in these strange ways, very human-like? So this is puzzling for many people. It's not puzzling for the devotees like Yudhisthira. So as we see here in this verse, Yudhisthira understood the nature of Krishna's appearance and disappearance. And now, of course, it was a disappearance, so he heard about how Krishna had disappeared. Then he was about to join him. So this disappearance may take any form. The form of the Lord can appear and disappear in any way he chooses. But the devotee understands that actually the Lord is eternal. So if he disappears, materialists would think he died. He had a material body and he died. A lot of his organs began to, become dysfunctional, and then he died. But the devotee understands this is only an appearance, because actually he's eternal. He cannot die. He cannot be born. He cannot get injured. He cannot get sick. Nothing can happen to him. So that's the position of a devotee like Yudhisthira. So Yudhisthira, of course, was a great devotee. Not just a great devotee, he's also an eternal associate of the Lord, a Nityasiddha. So he can never be really bewildered at all. Of course, we find even Yudhisthira and others, they lament for Krishna's disappearance, but it's not because Krishna died. Lamentation is they're separated from Krishna. So that's a type of prema and separation. So it has got nothing to do with material lamentation for a material body. It's lamentation because of separation from the Lord. So therefore, they desire in separation to meet the Lord, and that is exactly what Yudhisthira is deciding here. Okay, I will join Krishna in his eternal pastimes, and then we'll solve this problem of separation. Whatever. So the devotees understand this. Nityasiddha devotees, of course, understand this. People who are just devotees on a lower level, they may not completely understand this, but Nevertheless, this is a, we can say, a point of knowledge that we accept from the very beginning. We accept the difference between Supreme Lord and the Jivas. Supreme Lord doesn't have a material body, is never born and never dies. The Jivas, of course, if they have a spiritual body, that body never is born or die. But some Jivas do have material bodies, and they also, those bodies die. But the Lord never takes the material body at all, and never dies. So the Lord is very distinct from the Jivas. So that is a fundamental concept that we have to accept in devotional service for any Vaishnava. We have to accept that supreme position of the Lord. He's very special, and he never takes a material body, he's never born, never dies. He is the supreme person, and all the Jivas are dependent upon him. They are his servants. So once we accept that, then we can practice bhakti, devotional service. But then as we practice, this idea that Krishna is Supreme Lord and I'm a little Jiva, that can become eclipsed by one's love, as it is for the people of Vrindavan, completely eclipsed. They don't think of Krishna as God at all. So that is the highest type of love of all, the highest type of bhakti, to come to that stage where the love is so intense we don't see Krishna as Supreme Lord. But in the beginning, when we're doing sadhana, we do have to accept that position of Krishna as Supreme and us as servants. So that is why we'll find in the Bhagavatam and in Bhagavad Gita, this point is repeatedly emphasized, that we are different from the Supreme Lord. Very distinct. And of course, another reason for that, not only because it's part of bhakti, is that other philosophies say something different. The Jiva is not different from the Supreme Lord. He is Brahman. He is supreme. And the goal is to merge into him and become God, become Brahman. So that is the Mayavad philosophy. So a lot of the emphasis put upon this distinction of the Lord and the difference of the Jiva, etc., is there because it's there to refute these ideas, impersonal ideas of the Mayavadis. In this way, we have to, in the beginning, have a very clear understanding. If we don't have that clear understanding, we can do bhakti, but it is called bhakti abhas, like we have nama abhas. So if we perform bhakti with this ignorance, with an unclear idea of who the Supreme Lord is and who the Jiva is, then we have this bhakti abhas. So it is better than no bhakti, I suppose, but it also doesn't lead to the highest goal, prema, because if you can't distinguish the Lord from the Jiva, then and you want to merge into him, then bhakti becomes defeated, because ultimately in impersonal realization and sayuja mukti, there is no bhakti. So that's why we have to make the distinction. But though that is there, Krishna is very merciful. So because of his attractive form, his very sweet form and his sweet pastimes, if we become absorbed in the sweetness of Krishna, then we also tend to forget the idea that he is Supreme Lord. And we become absorbed in serving him in these very intimate moods of the people of Vrindavan. And then that's what we attain. So actually the whole purpose of Bhagavatam is that. And this whole first canto also is simply to introduce the origin of the Bhagavatam, how Sukadeva came to recite the Bhagavatam to Parikshit. So that's why we have all these stories of the disappearance of the Pandavas and Krishna, and then finally Parikshit was there, and then he goes out and inspects his kingdom, he meets Kali, then he gets cursed by a brahmana to die, and then Sukadeva appears, and then Bhagavatam gets recited starting in the second canto. So the whole first canto is leading up to the reasons. So one was Parikshit and Sukadeva, the other is how Sukadeva got his information. So then he got it from Vedavyas, and how did Vedavyas write the Bhagavatam? He got it from Narada Muni. So even in the second and third chapters here, we got a whole story of Narada Muni and how he developed his bhakti, and then he taught Vedavyas. So what was the instruction of Narada Muni to Vedavyas? He says, all the Puranas, forget about all these other Puranas, 18 Puranas are there, forget about all of this, forget about all the compilation of the Vedas and the Brahma Sutras, etc. Narada Muni says, no, useless. It's all useless. People simply become confused. So just indicate Krishna as Supreme Lord. That's all. So right one works. So therefore, that's why we have Bhagavatam in this form. Vedavyas revised his Bhagavatam and made Krishna the prominent person. And therefore, even at the very beginning of Bhagavatam, we have Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. He is the ultimate form of the Lord. There's many forms of the Lord. He's the ultimate form. So being a Vaishnava is good, but being a devotee of Krishna is the best. So that's the theme of the Bhagavatam. And our acharyas say that every statement of the Bhagavatam has to coincide with this. If it contradicts it, we have to reject it. Huh? If we talk about impersonalism or other forms, they get glorified. Yes, but Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. He is the ultimate form. So that is represented mostly, well, of course we have pastimes described in other cantos, but as here, also in the first canto, third canto, etc. But the ultimate is the 10th canto, where we have more detailed description of Krishna's pastimes. And of those pastimes, in the 90 chapters or so of 10th canto, that first section with Vrindavan, the pastimes in Vrindavan, they are considered to be the essence of the Bhagavatam. Yeah? From his birth or his appearance in Gokul all the way up to his leaving Vrindavan and going to Mathura. That's considered to be the essence because that's the intimate section where the people, the Vrajavasis, don't see Krishna as God. And they simply see him as their child or as their friend or as their lover. So that's considered to be the highest of all. So therefore the people of Vrindavan are considered to be the highest devotees. And we're as followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we're following after them, taking up the similar moods so that we can also develop such intimate love for Krishna. So that is the whole essence of the Bhagavatam. Finally, that's the goal. Here we have the introduction to the whole work, and here we have the disappearance of Krishna, which is puzzling for materialists and puzzling for some devotees even, like Brahma even. But the sincere devotees, if they read very carefully, they can understand all the purposes of this, just as Yudhisthira did, that it's only a show to bewilder those who don't want to believe that Krishna is Supreme Lord. So Krishna sometimes does this, and Bhagavatam also does it. It hides the truth from unqualified people. So we can say that's one reason for Krishna appearing and disappearing in these particular ways, so that people who want to be materialistic can think of Krishna as a material person. But the devotee, sincere devotee, he will very carefully contemplate these things and understand the real purpose. So here it says that in the word for word is Yudhisthira deliberated, nishamya. He very carefully thought about how Krishna disappeared. And then he understood the real truth. He didn't think, oh, this is, he's died. He understood. And therefore he wanted to join Krishna in his eternal pastimes. So as devotees doing sadhana, we should carefully read the Bhagavatam and understand the real truth and not take maybe the superficial meaning of things and get confused by that. So we should follow Yudhisthira's example. It may be difficult for us, but then we have acharyas and their explanations. We have Prabhupada here who gives a very nice purport on the real meaning of this disappearance of Krishna. So with that, then we get the real meaning of the pastimes of Krishna and the Bhagavatam. Okay. Any question?
Srila Prabhupada refers to Jnanakanda in this 4-9 in his purport. Often refers to that, understanding Krishna. So it seems that today, practicing devotees, we're all going to have some level of appreciation of Krishna's pastimes.
In truth, the appearance and disappearance of Krishna.
And you explain how there's four levels of devotees right after the...
Yeah.
How do we understand that first?
Mm-hmm. Well, appearance and disappearance of Krishna, that only relates to Krishna in the material world, because in the spiritual world there's no appearance and disappearance, and nobody's born, nobody dies, so it's beyond their experience at that point, so they don't have to worry about that. But in the material world, the avatars, including Krishna, have an appearance and a disappearance. So therefore, as I said, the people doing sadhana bhakti have to really understand the difference between Supreme Lord and the Jiva as a preliminary for their bhakti. And if they don't have that, then their bhakti is faulty and they end up merging in God or something else. So they do have to have that initial distinction, in spite of the fact that as they progress, then as they become more attracted to the people of Vrindavan, they tend to concentrate on that intimate relationship, and that becomes a little bit forgotten. But nevertheless, the basis of their devotion is this idea of Krishna is very different from the Jiva, and he's never affected by birth and death in the material world. So it's part of the sadhana of the Jivas in the material world.
So the body who doesn't really have that, has that faulty conception, would he become a Brahma body rather than a Maya body, because he would have a mentality that not like an envious mentality to his body?
Oh, he's somewhat favorable, but still he doesn't really understand the distinction. Could be, yeah. Of course, some of the Mayavadis also read the Bhagavatam. Of course, they never made a serious commentary on it, but when they read it, then they will find all the statements that look a little impersonal, like in the third canto with Kapila, and in the 11th canto, Krishna himself has three chapters dedicated to impersonal stuff. And at the in the last canto, 12th canto, then Sukadev tells Parikshit, now you've heard everything, and the final goal is merging in Brahman. So the Mayavadis and impersonalists take that verse and say, this is the conclusion then, after reading all the pastimes of Krishna, then you give up Krishna and you merge in Brahman. They'll take that as the ultimate, you know, conclusion. So even Mayavadis, they can read Bhagavatam and then they come to this conclusion by some, you know, of course, there's not a thorough investigation of all the statements of Bhagavatam, but they simply take things out that are suitable to their beliefs, so they can distort the whole thing and come to a Mayavad conclusion. Others may not. They may come to a, like Sukadeva was a Brahmavadi, he was not a Mayavadi, but then he became a devotee as a result, because there was no offense in his Brahmavadi type thing. Whereas the Mayavadi, they definitely say the form of the Lord is illusory. It's not real. So that's aparad, so it's very difficult for them to become a devotee after that. If they're simply Brahmavadis who prefer some getting out of the material world, but they also accept the form of the Lord, then there's chances that they can advance beyond that. So that's good for them. So we have several interpretations of impersonalism. One is simply wanting to merge in Brahman, even if one accepts the form of the Lord, or actually not accepting the form, emerging and becoming Brahman oneself, and the Jiva becoming Brahman. So that's offensive.
Mark, you were explaining that the material exists, these pastimes of the wilderness, and therefore they don't function in the Krishna world. The devotees, they study by the common prayer, they understand the pastimes, and therefore they serve the Krishna. Yet we see that Kunti phrase in the 8th chapter, there's a few string of verses there, where she's talking about all the different things that Krishna does, and she says, but this is bewildering. Mm-hmm. So she's presenting herself as being bewildered. I wonder if because she, you know, she's the common prayer.
Yeah, and Bhishma also says pastimes of Krishna are bewildering, because this whole battle of Kurukshetra, why Krishna has to do this if he's Supreme Lord, why does he arrange for all these people getting killed, and why he didn't help the Pandavas when they were, you know, abandoned by everybody, why they had to suffer for 13 years, and, you know, so certain aspects of the pastimes may be, look like they're bewildering for the devotees, and they will state that in this way. And this again is another aspect of Krishna particularly, that he does things which are bewildering even for great devotees, even for Nitya Siddha devotees, but ultimately it's resolved and those devotees understand everything. So we can say that's a type of yoga maya in a sense, where certain aspects of awareness are covered up and then they only see this aspect and then they get bewildered like that. Like Arjuna gets bewildered on the battlefield of Kurukshetra and throws down his weapons. When he's a very great Kshatriya, he should never be afraid of anything, but he's just shaking like this and crying and throwing down his weapons. How could it happen? Bewilderment. But why he got bewildered? it was the will of Krishna, so that Bhagavad Gita could be spoken. So certain things are aspects of the will of the Lord, the arrangement of Kurukshetra war, etc., to fulfill his purpose of annihilating all the demons, etc. But when it's happening, even the devotees may get a little confused by what's happening in order that it take place. And we could say the will of Krishna is involved in that, or Yogamaya is involved in covering their awareness to some degree.
Maharaj, if you could explain in Lord Chaitanya's philosophy, there's achincha beta beta tattva. So is it that achincha, that inconceivable nature of the truth, is that we'll never be able to understand it? Yeah. We can appreciate it to a certain extent, but will we ever actually really understand what's going on?
Well, ultimately no, because we have knowledge as jivas, but our knowledge is nothing in comparison with Krishna's knowledge and his awareness and his abilities. So there's always going to be some thing we don't understand, something unpredictable about it. Of course, that achintya, in this particular concept, achintya beda bade, refers to the idea that Krishna is only one entity, Krishna. He's everything. And simultaneously, we do accept that there is material world and there's jivas and Krishna. So there is beda. There is difference. There's many, but there's only one also, Krishna. Everything is Krishna. Because that's what scripture says, sarvam kalvidam brahma. Only Brahman exists. Brahman is everything. Nothing else is there. No jivas, nothing. But then simultaneously we see there's two birds in a tree. There's a jiva, the Supreme Lord. So we get contrary statements in scripture, especially the Upanishads. So how to resolve the issue? So there are different acharyas will take different stances, and Madhvacharya will say, well, the statements of oneness are metaphorical. Everything is one with the Lord because he controls everything. Madhvacharya will say the different statements, like two birds in a tree, that's metaphorical. Only for illusory conditions in this material world that is stated. Ultimately, there is no two birds. There's only Brahman. So we can interpret and go, argue back and forth like this. So Lord Chaitanya's idea is that let's take both statements. Krishna is one, there's only one Krishna, nothing else exists, and there's also difference. But then there's a contradiction, because how can contraries simultaneously exist? How can this be white and black at the same time? How can it exist and not exist at the same time? It just doesn't make any sense to our logical mind. So then the answer to that is that Krishna has a chintya shakti, inconceivable power by which opposites can exist simultaneously. And it's difficult for us to understand, but Krishna can do it. So that's achintya shakti, which also exists in the material world, in quantum mechanics. A particle, something can act like a particle, can also act like a wave. But waves and particles are contrary things. They're not the same. They're completely different, and they act differently. But the same object can be a particle and a wave, depending on how you look at it. So that's achintya in the material world, which scientists cannot explain. Why it's like that, they cannot explain it. But it exists. Of course, on a higher level than we have, everything is one with Krishna, and Krishna is different from everything. So that those contrary states are resolved by achintya shakti.
I was trying to understand that too, how we can explain to someone that we have this thing of the jiva is like the spark.
Yeah.
And the fire.
Yeah.
So, and I always understood it as the quality was different.
Yeah.
Could you make
or the quantity.
Yeah.
So that's also that's one way we explain it. So that emphasizes the difference. But at the same time we say oneness. So where is it oneness? And then we say the qualities are the same like that.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's one way of explaining it. Of course, actually all Vaishnavas will accept that. Even if the Dvaita philosophers like Madhvacharya says only difference, qualities are the same, but ultimately there's difference. So we also accept that, and even Jiva Goswami gives that example of the sun and the rays of the sun, or the fire and the spark of the fire like that. But if we say that the spark is the fire, it's a little bit difficult for us to understand that. No, it's not like that, because it's very small and one is very big. But nevertheless, the Upanishads say only Brahman exists. So that's quite contrary. He says only the fire exists, no spark is there at all. So that's a little contrary.
You spoke about Brahma, and was it only Brahma that said that young boy was the most what did you say, he was
the highest form of the Lord.
The highest form.
Yeah.
Is that only for Lord Brahma or for everyone?
Well, it was particularly his realization, because he was thinking, doubting Krishna was Supreme Lord, because he was playing like a little boy in the fields, and that was not his expectation of who the Supreme Lord should be, so that was his particular realization. That even his bewilderment was said to be Krishna's will, Yoga Maya, not his fault. Because the Supreme Lord himself had promised Brahma when he was born, you will never be bewildered in this lifetime. So if his bewilderment was there, it was the will of the Lord, like Arjuna getting bewildered on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So we can't blame Brahma for that also. Well, we can even with Invaiti Bhakti and taking Krishna as Supreme Lord, we also see him as a person. So other sampradayas like Madhvas and Sri Sampradaya, they accept Krishna, the Lord, as a person, but it is very formal and they see him as Supreme Lord only. But he's a person. So in our sampradaya, Gaudiya Sampradaya, the personal aspect becomes very personal and it eclipses the lordly aspect of the Lord. Yeah? So there's a person in either case, whether it's with reverence or with intimacy, but we emphasize the intimate relationship in which ultimately the devotee even forgets that Krishna is God on a high level. So how to prevent the casualness or familiarity breeds contempt type of attitude, we have to go by scriptural rules, even if we're going to worship Krishna. So we have to have some rules. So we do have Vaidhi Bhakti, which is a lot of rules, and we have Raganuga, and we'll think that Raganuga means no rules, but it actually isn't. So even in Raganuga Bhakti, there are scriptural processes and methods to follow. And we have to follow some rules and regulations. It's not you don't have any rules and you can break all the regular rules. No, there are rules to follow there also. But the mood is a little different because we're approaching Krishna with great love rather than depending on the rules for our service. So even with that spontaneous type of love, there are rules and regulations. If one comes to a level of bhava and prema, then that the dependence on the rules becomes less and less and disappears completely, because one is beyond rules and regulations and prema, since one is perfect. Yeah? But even for people doing Vaidhi Bhakti who reach Vaikuntha, where they, you know, through Vaidhi Bhakti they reach Vaikuntha, because their mood was one of reverence for the Lord in Vaidhi Bhakti, that continues in the spiritual world. That's why they go to Vaikuntha, not to Goloka, because they see him as Supreme Lord. So that reverence continues, and that's part of their bhakti. They prefer that reverential relationship with the Supreme Lord, so that continues. That's the influence of their Vaidhi Bhakti in the material world. It continues to that. But if one goes to Raganuga, then one still has rules and regulations to follow, but there's not such an emphasis, and then the spontaneous love for Krishna becomes more prominent. We can say that the rules and regulations in terms of conduct in the material world apply in either case. So in other words, if you want to have spontaneous love for Krishna, doesn't mean you can do anything you want in the material world and break all the rules and regulations. It doesn't mean that. It's all the spontaneity is in the relationship with Krishna and how we serve him. That's all. That's where the spontaneity is, in which we forget about rules and regulations. So instead of serving Krishna at 12 noon exactly, you know, maybe Krishna wants to eat a little later that day, so one delays a little bit for some reason. Or, in Radharaman Temple, in the summertime they don't offer lamps. It gets too hot for Krishna. So they think, well, why did Krishna want to have lamps around him in the hot weather like this? So they don't offer lamps in the hot weather. So, you know, but if we're following Vaidhi Bhakti very strictly, then everything has to be, you know, all the time the same type of thing. So there's a little difference there. But as far as the basic rules of conduct, they apply in either case. Okay? Hare Krishna.